I'll call them. It's 51. I'll call the meeting to order and ask you to recite the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance, to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands,
one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I cannot say it slowly. All right, so we'll go on to roll call. Ron Leno is excused. Adam Pacheco?
Present.
Here. And Bob Lisi is present.
Here.
All right. And I'm here, so we have a quorum. We'll go on down to approval of the minutes. Meg Martins has actually been working. I think she's all caught up, but I only have the September 3rd minutes.
September 3rd is the only minutes that went in this meeting package because I didn't get the other ones till after. Next month, all of them will be in there.
Perfect. So has everyone had a chance to review the September 3rd minutes?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Do I have a motion to accept?
I will make a motion to accept the minutes of the Derby Housing Authority, September 3rd, 20.
Thank you, Bob.
20.
I will second.
Perfect. Adam, thank you so much. Any discussion, any questions, comments, changes to the minutes, discussion on the minutes? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Of accepting?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carried. Additions, deletions, corrections. Does anyone have any for the agenda? Neither do I this time, so that's good. We'll move on to the public portion. Is there anyone from the public who wishes to speak? I think there is not. So we'll go on down to old business. Ken is not here with us. So if you had a chance to review the minutes, let's talk about that for a minute. Anybody have any questions? I can tell you after the discussion that we had, that the board had at the last meeting, Ken and I subsequently had a conversation about several of these items, and one being the funding of the FSS program. He offered us a couple of options. One is to go out and try to find someone who would like to take Laura's place and do the job part-time with the money that's remaining. Or Imagineers would be happy to take over the program with the money that's left at no additional cost to us. So let's start with that. So, all right, we'll go to funding. You see that we got the 5 additional VASH vouchers, which I think is great. So anytime that we can increase the number of vouchers that we have for our program, the more we increase our funding and the more services we can provide to, especially to the veterans who are so in need. So that's a really good thing. Back to the family sufficiency program. Do you have a preference as to how we do this? Do you want us to go and try to hire someone, or do you want to let them just take it over?
Linda, what was your conversation like with Laura? Remember we talked about that?
Yes. You know, she was fine. She really just, she couldn't do it. She couldn't do it on a part-time basis. She was happy for the opportunity to apply for unemployment for the time being until she, you know, recoups and decides where she wants to go. She wants to look for something else full time. So it was very pleasant and completely understanding. And we gave her a packet so that she could apply and all the information that she would need. So we left on good terms.
I mean, just the way I'm thinking is that if we can hire a part-time person, I think it's good to have someone else in the office. And it kind of divorces us a little bit more from Imagineers.
Except that probably we're going to ask them to supervise that person because Ellen doesn't have the time or the skill set. But that's fine. They're perfectly happy to do that.
If we can find someone.
Correct. Correct. So Adam, what are your thoughts about that?
I'm of the mind that we privatize it entirely. If Imagineers can work within the confines of the dollars that we have, you know, through the grant, mm-hmm. then I want to give them the full boat, provided it's not going to cost us an additional amount.
Yeah, he assured me that it wouldn't. You know, Bob, I think I have to say my own opinion on this is that I kind of lean to what Adam is saying, only in that I think Ellen, you certainly can speak for yourself, is going to feel some responsibility for that person. That person may come and ask Ellen some questions, and I think maybe she's not feeling like she's in a position right at the moment to take that on, even though we know that technically she's being supervised, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does. I'm fine with that as long as, you know, because how long would it take us to find somebody? You never know. It could take a month.
Well, I just don't know how you're going to find anybody at partial rate, as well as getting them up to speed on the program. And then you're still going to have an onboarding process with Imagineers. I just don't see any reason to not just let them continue with the program entirely.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I see your point about, you know, stepping back a little bit from Imagineers. And I think, you know, a little farther down the agenda, there's the opportunity to do that. But I think just because of where we are, and I don't know even what's going to happen with this program. You know, Ian Tink had said to me, and Laura herself had said, that she thought at some point this was going to become obsolete. Some other housing authorities don't use FSS. So this may just be the last year. I don't know, but I just think for the duration, for me, it's easier to let them handle it if they're willing at no cost.
Right. That's fine.
All right. So do we want to vote on that?
Yes, I'll make a motion that we eliminate our FSS coordinator position and outsource the works entirely to Imagineers, provided they can provide the services necessary under the granted dollar amount from the federal government. So no additional cost is borne by the Derby Housing Authority.
Okay. I'll second. Okay, Bob, thank you. Discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, motion carries. Thank you. The project-based voucher program, I think that's kind of self-sufficient. That has to be renewed every year. And I guess that Chazak LLC put in for a bit of a rent increase. It was approved by HUD. Their project-based voucher paperwork was reestablished for another year. So I think that's a great thing.
Mm-hmm.
Agency plan submitted to HUD. That was sent in. We voted on it at the last meeting. Nobody came to the public hearing. I think, Bob, you suggested that going forward, we solicit comments or suggestions from participating landlords on the changes, goals, objectives, and policies of the Housing Authority. And they will do that for us. They're in agreement. Latest HUD news, the CDC extended the eviction moratorium. I think that was no big surprise. The accounting, I think, is pretty self-sufficient. They've been working on the direct deposit. A lot of landlords have been saying that that would be so helpful to them. I think other housing authorities have done it in the past. So they're working on that. Bagger Terrace. Okay, so that was one of the things that I talked with Penn at length, because Joan raised it at the last meeting. It's certainly something that I want to see move forward. This has to do with the project-based vouchers over there. We decided to meet sometime later in the month. Ellen is still trying to finish up her recertifications. I am going to be putting in a lot of hours at work. Ken actually said they've got a lot of things going on, but we decided that we would meet and try to find a way to break it into steps, because to take it on in its entirety and try to get it all done at once, it's going to be a little overwhelming. Part of it is going, for them, is going back and refiguring Jamie's figures and then bringing it forward to see exactly what it is that we owe. And then the next step is meeting with the residents. You know, what makes it difficult is that it's winter and we're still in the midst of this pandemic, because you know that when you have a group in a setting like this, if they don't hear the same thing at the same time, it becomes like a game of telephone. And that's the one thing that we don't want to see happen here. We want people to come away from that meeting clearly understanding, for those who are owed money, what happened and why it happened. And for those who are new to Steiger Terrace or not getting money back, to understand what it's going to change. Because some people think, oh my God, I'm going on Section 8. And they get really worried about that. They need to know that for all intent and purposes, things are not going to change for them. Things aren't going to be different. They're still going to be living where they're living, if that's their choice. But it comes with the gift of a voucher. So if somebody says, hey, my daughter's living in Coventry, and if I can get a Section 8 apartment up in Coventry and being closer, I'm going to do that. So it gives them more mobility. That's the gift. If they're not getting money back, they still have, you know, this ability to be mobile and still not pay more rent. So
yeah, I think that's just important for us to utilize Joan and make sure that the disinformation is curtailed and managed. And I think
absolutely
she's probably going to be the point person to ensure that a single stream of information is occurring effectively.
I agree. I mean, they have a lot of trust in Joan. They know her. They rely on her a lot, and so she definitely needs to be part of the process. We talked briefly. I saw her this afternoon when I went over to sign checks, and we were trying to decide how many groups we would need, because I would want the same cast of characters to give the same discussion to groups so that everybody kind of hears, if not at the same time. If it was spring, we could do it outside, but I don't know how else to do it. But my thinking is it's really important for them to feel like they've heard the same thing and they all have a pretty clear understanding.
Yeah, what if we were to put a packet, you know, an information packet together that had a subsection of frequently asked questions, and that Ooh. Kind of would, you know, address concerns.
Nice. All right, let me make a note here. All right. So we'll work on that. I'll keep you posted. Anybody wants to get on this committee and to work on it, that's you to let me know, and that would be great. And we'll get it done. This is going to be a big undertaking, but I think we can all breathe a sigh of relief when this piece is put to rest. At least how I feel about it. Anything of question that we haven't talked about, anything that you want me to raise? Because I think the other issue, obviously, is the issue of the ongoing maintenance issues. And he hasn't addressed it here, but he and I had a conversation. So I certainly will address it when we get down to D. Anything else you want to talk about that's here?
Not with Imagineer, not with his report.
I'm sorry?
No, not with Imagineer's update.
Okay, very good. All right, then I'll move on to Joan. Joan told me that she wasn't going to be able to come today. Kudos to her for holding the two COVID-19 vaccine clinics. I know last time she was trying to put it together, and she certainly did. And it looks like between the ones that had already received their shots, some that were attended these, we have a great start at our folks getting vaccinated. It was nice of Griffin to do that, and probably we should send a letter thanking them. I think, you know, for me, one of the things that is a little worrisome is looking at her continued feeling that it's a challenge to work a full-time job in 18 hours. She does a lot. Without a doubt, she does a lot. I don't know really how to address that, because there's no room in that grant to expand the hours.
Yeah, I was just reading. I read that a couple times. You know what, Linda? That's what we have. you know, and that's what she signed up for. I mean, it's great that she does all these little extra things, but I think a lot of us do a lot of extra little things that we do, and, you know, with no compensation. So I don't know.
It's true. She continues to put it out there, and I'm not quite sure how to address it. I know that when she hands her hours in every week to Ellen, she hands in, and I know I've said this before, she hands in, you know, the sheet that says, I worked, okay, example, 21 hours, and that's in one color. And then she said, but I know that I work 18 hours, and that's in a separate color. Again, liability for us, I don't know, because we all know that she does it. I don't know, does it need to be addressed, how it needs to be addressed. I'm really looking for some direction, or just pat her on the back and say, we know you work way more than you should, but we thank you for it.
Yeah. That would be my suggestion. Thank you for, you know, thank you.
Yeah. And we do appreciate, without
a doubt. She has been a big help in collecting the information for the research. She's out there collecting a lot of information. Diane's calling all the people. We're sending out letters.
Yeah,
tell us she was certified for that?
She did. And after the last meeting, she said to me, I can't believe that you all voted to pay somebody else outside the agency when I can do the work. And I said to her, Tone, you're already putting in so many more hours than we can pay you for, you know, under the grant. How could the board come back and ask you to take on one more thing? And she didn't have an answer for that either. But she's been helpful in many ways in collecting the documents and helping the people who haven't been through the process before understand what documents are required. Some people are, you know, as we age, we get a little bit more protective of ourselves, and people sometimes are uncomfortable handing over their bank accounts or their bill ledgers. So she's been really helpful that way, but to ask her to do it, you know, when she's already so far over her 18 hours, I don't know about that.
Well, there comes an issue when you start, you know, given our positions, asking somebody, an employee, to do something, there becomes an onus to compensate, and they're protected under, you know, FLSA. So I have a degree of trepidation tasking her with more things, and quite frankly, I am concerned about the fact that there is notification when she submits a time card saying that she's working more hours. That is notifying the employer that work is being done without compensation. That's problematic.
Absolutely. For me. Yeah. The state employee in me says that too.
So I think we need to come out with or have a unified approach that says that Ellen, quite frankly, needs to manage the employee better and ensure that she's working within the confines of her contract and what she here to do.
She has caller ID, so she takes calls from all these people all times of night. She got the caller ID. They have her phone number. I mean, she'll go to the store for them. She goes and picks up food for them.
Ellen, stop. When she submits a time card that says she's worked hours that she hasn't been compensated for, you need to start a process of saying, okay, I'm warning you about this, and now this can't occur in the future. And if she continues to do that, you need to address it. So we're not liable. There's a liability to the DHA right now that you need to manage.
I mean, I think what She can put in the 18 hours, but she cannot document 21 hours. You know, it's 18 hours. That's all she has. She has to be told that what we see is 18 hours. What she does above and beyond that, you know, that's not within her job description.
Right, and it's problematic that she's documenting it and submitting it to her supervisor and saying that these things are occurring, so we're now aware of it, and we're turning a blind eye, and that's what's creating this liability.
Agreed. I agree.
The only thing we want to see is 18 hours.
Correct.
Yeah, in the future, when we look at renewal of contract, if we're in a different financial position, I'm certainly happy to entertain additional hours on, you know, our dime, so to speak. But that's not here now.
Right. Correct. She received an email stating that her hours were going down to 18 hours when the grant was cut. She received an email. I've said to her several times, that's not part of your job. You're only supposed to be working 18 hours.
Well, and it's unfortunate, and it's going to be uncomfortable, but you may have to start a disciplinary process.
All right.
Yeah.
So we can do that. Ellen, I can help you with a letter. Or Adam, if you want to help her with a letter. I know she doesn't always feel like she's competent in the letter writing.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm my phone's on. I can come to the office whenever you need.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. Because I would feel better. Because, you know, we've discussed this before and she's been doing this for a while and you know, here it is again. It continues to be a challenge to work a full-time job in 18 hours.
I'm just getting concerned now that I'm hearing that she's making a documented and formal notification to the employer that this is occurring, that it seems like, I don't know, I hate to think there's a nefarious plot to this, and it might not be the case, but it's certainly sending up red flags for me saying we need to be better about minding the shop.
Okay, agreed. All right. So Ellen, give Adam a call and he'll help you with the letter. You can draft the letter and he'll help you with it. And
sir, my free time.
I know. Because I know in my heart, if there was extra money to be had, I would want to see Ellen get an assistant, someone to work with her, because she is really buried. Before I would, not that I don't appreciate and I know that the residents appreciate the work that Joan does, but before we were to pay some money on our dime, I would want to advocate for Ellen.
I agree completely. And that's exactly where my concern lies, is once we have an employee making these claims, we're going to become financially liable. And now I can't take care of the employee that's been with us through the tough times, you know?
Sure. All right. Noted, and we'll address it. Any other discussion on her monthly report? Okay. Then we will move on. Update on CC Manor. Okay, so I've got good news and I've got bad news. The bad news came today. So the good news is that it'll be ready for occupancy on March 1st. We have one more construction meeting. I'll text you guys the date, because you really should come and see it. The units are spectacular, and the work inside the community room is nice as well. There's one thing that has to happen before we get the certificate of occupancy, and that is the fire alarm needs to be checked. And I guess it was wired differently when it was the administration building. It covered the upstairs and downstairs. Now it's not covering the upstairs. There's just smoke detectors. It was to be used for the downstairs area, which still belongs to the housing authority. We're using it for storage. So we called our tech company who set it up and asked them to go and take a look at it. And he said he's willing to help rewire it and get it up and running, but he wants Phil Hawks to come with him because he wants to know. He's a little concerned that the grant and the architect didn't require the alarms in the three units and only the downstairs. He wants to know that Phil is okay with just having smoke detectors before he proceeds, and that makes perfect sense. So he went out today, he took a quick look. He's going to call Phil and see when Phil can go out with him and to take a look and tell him what he wants. But we're very, very close. The bad news was we came in way under bid, and there was a significant amount of money left to do what we wanted in terms of the lighting and the site work. And so Peter Testa sent out a letter to TAFA asking, you know, since the bulk of the work had been done, that was to be used for the grant, and there was this money left over, could we use it for site work and lighting? And they said no. Nobody saw that coming. Peter didn't see it. I'm a little shocked. So that work on the sidewalk, additional lighting, some of the landscaping. I mean, landscaping we don't care about, but lighting and the repairs to the sidewalk, those were huge. And they said no. So that's kind of where we are. What we've got is what we've got, and what we've got is pretty nice and is certainly good for us and good for
how much money?
Oh my gosh. It was a couple of hundred thousand.
That has to go back?
Has to go back. In fact, I can send you a copy of the letter, because when he emailed tonight, he put a copy of this of Tafa's letter in there. They're not leaving the balance with us. So I don't know that we have recourse. I think Peter will think about it. Peter has not been feeling well. I'll leave it at that. So how he's feeling, he wasn't feeling really well last week. I don't know how he's doing today, but he did send this, and he was very upset. You know, whether or not he feels we can appeal it, we can readdress it, ask for an explanation, I don't know. But I know that Peter will be on top of it, and I'll work to get you the information when I have it.
We ran into a lot of problems with electrical over there at CC Manor, the outside lighting. We're into thousands of dollars between Imagineers, electricians, all of that.
So what happened was I got a call from Ellen on a weekend saying that there were no lights at CC, no outside lights, and that somebody had fallen and gotten hurt. And so I said, well, we'll call Imagineers. I didn't even start to think, because our construction folks had to lift one of the light poles. It was the only light pole that was touched. Had to lift it near where the generator slab was going in. Had to raise it above the ground. And at one point, it was literally lying on the ground. And the contractor said to me, I think somebody backed into it. We didn't know what happened. He's saying they didn't leave it like that. Apparently, water got in. What Ellen tells me, water got in. And
well, I got a call stating that the pole that they were doing something to all filled up with water, and it was all electrical and stuff in there. Then I guess the electrician that Imagineers had come out found a problem where this pole was or whatever. So now they had to dig trenches and all kinds of stuff to rerun wiring. And, I mean, we didn't have no problem with the outside lighting at CC Manor before all of that. So we're going to have to somehow talk to Imagineers and the electrical person and all that.
I raised it at the last construction meeting, and they asked the foreman who was there, and he said no, that they didn't, it wasn't anything that they had done. I asked Ellen to talk to Imagineers, and if in fact that's what their electrical company is saying is that this was caused by the construction folks, then we need it in writing, and we'll take it to them and ask them for some reimbursement. It's just a lot of money. It took a while. So I'll tell you that last week the mayor got a call from one of the residents there saying that our pod, we'd had to rent a pod to take all of the things out of the community room so that they could do the floor and the painting and the whatever. And so we ended up having to, because the contractors extended, we had to extend the pod. So this woman called the mayor and said that the pod was still there and the light to the right of the pod was out. So while I was on the phone, Mayor Zekin drove down there and said, okay, this is really strange. There's three lights out here in the back parking lot where the pod is. This was like at 10:30 in the morning. All the rest of your lights were on. So obviously, you know, we were paying for lights on in broad daylight, and they weren't getting them at night.
There's been a problem with that lighting since probably like January, if not before. It's an ongoing problem that's been there for, it was fine. And then all of a sudden, they actually put a whole new timer in over there. There was nothing wrong with our timer. It was working. Everything was fine. I don't know
either, but until somebody tells us, I don't know what else we can do. If we can get the electrical company that Imagineers uses to say that it was something in the, because I know that the day that pole was laying down, the head of that construction team sent me a picture and said, did somebody run into this? Did somebody back into it?
The Imagineers electrician had to take it down to troubleshoot the problem.
So we don't know how long he had it down if water got into it.
No, the water was in there long before that.
Okay. So let's get something in writing so that I can go back to the architect and say, listen, you know, here's what's going on and here's the amount of money that we've spent on this issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's probably worth having a conversation with Ken from Imagineers, given the number of contracts he has around the state. He's going to have relationships with Chaffa to see if we can utilize the remainder of the grant dollars to correct this through, you know, a letter of appeal or whatever, and see what his thoughts on approach are, being that construction disrupted services to the rest of the area there.
Yeah, well, I tried talking to Jim, and I don't know where I got with that, but I guess we maybe have to talk to the electrician they used, or...
I think it's incumbent on Imagineers. It's their electrical company to get something in writing from them for us. You know, spelling out.
I said to them, if you're saying it's because of the contractor, you need to give me something from somebody telling me what exactly the problem is in writing, so I have it.
Well, that's what we're going to ask Imagineers electrical people to do.
Yeah. I mean, one bill, $4,000.
All right.
That's
so,
not telling the other one.
Right. So just let me take a note here. All right. So we'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
We'll try to get something in writing from them. Any other discussion on, and we'll pursue the reasons why we didn't get to keep the balance of the money and if and anything there's we can do about that. Discussion on ongoing discussion of maintenance issues. Okay, so that was the other thing that Ken and I talked about. And he said to me, quite honestly, he said, I don't think we're a good fit for you all. And, you know, I think we're all beginning to agree with that. This is not working for anybody. They're a little frustrated. We're a little frustrated. Flumar was replaced and we have Jimmy, and that doesn't always work either. Sometimes we have two people on a job, three people on a job, and then they end up calling the next level, you know, a professional. So Ken was very concerned that this would impact our relationship in other areas. And I don't see that happening at all. I think that the work they've done with our Section 8 program is wonderful. I think that the work they attempted to do with Laura was also really helpful. So I told him I would take it to the board and, you know, talk about what else we can do. I think what Ellen would like to see, and it makes some sense to me, is that if we go back to having our own people, if we can find some, you know, I think we have to put an ad in the paper and reach out. But there was no other, when we did the RFP, there was no other company that bid other than Imagineers.
I mean,
thoughts on that?
Yeah, Linda, you know, we had a conversation about that. You know, I agree, but, you know, I've got some feelers out there with some people just for some part-time. Is Lou interested in coming back?
I think Lou would come. Go ahead, Ellen.
Go ahead, Linda.
No, go ahead. You talk to him directly.
I've been talking to him. He's been helping me out with different things. But he's just afraid with the COVID right now. He wants to wait and get a shot. The shot.
I think even he might be willing, if we had some people, I think he would be willing to supervise for the time being without actually having to be much on site. I just think it's worth a try. I'm sorry?
Supervise whom?
Anybody that we might hire.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
If we need an assessment of them, you know, if their work was good. He had done the checklist.
Yeah, this week I put out a couple, you know, I've got some calls out there to see if, you know, some of these, some of these contractors, if they have somebody who wants some, part-time work, but we're looking for two people.
Correct. That worked the best, having two part-time people. Ellen, you can speak to that.
Oh, it's good because you have one come in at 8 to 1:30, the other one comes in 11 to 4:30. You're covered for the whole day. And if they have to do anything together, they have that time that they're both there at the same time.
Did they rotate the weekends?
I believe they did it monthly. Like one month he would take it, the next month she would take it. If they worked it out between themselves, if one couldn't do it, you know, was going somewhere one weekend or whatever. They handled it all. I didn't even get involved. And I knew what was going on. They would come in and tell me. Like this whole thing with the electrical, they would have been on top of it. They would have known everything. What was going on. Now, I don't even know. You know, you try talking and...
I mean, are these positions something we get out there in print somewhere?
Yes, we'd have to publish.
Okay.
We could publish in the Register and in the Connecticut Post, I would think. Is that what we did before, Ellen?
I'm all for us moving forward and publishing, but I think there's a requirement for us as a board to at least discuss the fact that we're abandoning an existing contract. So,
well, yes, because we voted to hire them, although no one ever asked me to sign a contract. So there's not actual a formal. There certainly was a verbal agreement, if not a signed contract. So I think you're right, Adam. We need to vacate that vote, or we need to vote but we need them to continue to cover.
Correct.
We need to have coverage until we find people.
Right, but that's just the maintenance portion of their responsibility that we want to vacate.
That's correct. I just like if you could elaborate as to the conversation you had with Ken as to why they're a bad fit, I guess, and why they want out of this agreement as well.
Well, I think they're looking at a really traditional management model, and they feel like we didn't fit that for them. You know, he said to me that the board sets the budget, and then you know, we get the orders and then we go out. But he felt like there was a lot of feedback and direction given by our representative, more so than what they would think a traditional property management company gets. And to that end, I would say that we had a lot of concerns about the abilities of the people on site doing the work that made us have that kind of oversight.
You know, looking at, you know, what we paid him this month, I mean, there's $2,700 here in painting. And it's like, wait a minute.
Another thing, I asked for a breakdown.
Yeah.
Of each day, how many hours, and what was the pay rate for that day? She said she can't break it down by the day, because one day you're paying Jim, you're paying Dean to paint, you're paying Jim to do work orders, but what they do is they don't send the person there. Like, if they send a person, that person's going to be there all day long. You know what I mean? Because I asked for like two part-timers. They said, no, we can only do full-timers. So even if Jim is there full-time and he asks someone to help him, now you have that other person for the whole full day to pay too.
I have to say that Jim told Ellen a couple of times that his supervisor said to him, hey, I've got a guy who needs some hours. I'm going to send him down, find something for him to do. So the second or third time that was said to me, I got on the phone with the supervisor and I said, how does that work? That's not what we expect. You know, we have one guy. If we need extra people, we're going to ask for them. Or if somebody, you know, says to us, hey, this job is too big and we need two guys instead of one, that makes sense to me. But just calling up an employee and saying, hey, you got any extra work? I've got a guy with no hours. And he said, oh, no, that's not really what happened. He said, I just want you to know, I try to plan the schedule ahead of time. And so I want to make sure everybody has equal hours. So I always try to ask in advance, are there things that are going to need more than one person so I can schedule it in for the month, which is a very different thing than what Jimmy said. And so, yeah, you know, maybe
I don't want you to think that I have a problem with divorcing them for the maintenance contract, if you will. My concern is if they have clear concerns and, or their, whatever his terminology was, poor fit, what is that poor fitment? And what are there, do we have blind spots that we need to address? So when we go out and we look at how do we address maintenance going forward, are there things that we need to be adding to a either a contract or a job description or of RFP that so we can move forward in successful fashion?
Sure.
I'm going to give you an example of what went on. So I get a phone call. I believe it's from Mike. He wants me to approve a new storm door for a tenant. I said, absolutely not. He says, why? I said, because the tenant took his door apart so that his cat could get in and out of the house. And I made him put it back together. So I'm not buying him a new door.
So that's where I think he felt like there was too much oversight from our end. That's a classic example.
He said it could cost up to $1,000. I mean,
you know, we might be able to ask Ken to, you know, point us in a direction that we need to go going forward. Fine. If we're not a good fit, fine. You know, we did have two good people
Yeah.
That seemed to work. But if we take a look at some of the pitfalls that we experienced, you know, we need to strengthen those other, the other two people that we hire, we need to give them more direction as well.
Agreed.
Yeah.
But I think we need to get out there right now and see, get you know, two people on board and go back to what we did that worked.
Yeah. Because it really did. I mean, up until the time COVID mm-hmm. came, we were a well-oiled machine. We couldn't have been running any better. And this is problematic. And again, part of it might be our, but I think part of it comes from our knowing what you need and what you don't need in terms of dollar amounts. You know, I think I told you early on, they wanted to put in new windows and the cost of window was, I think it was $1,200 or $1,500. And I was like, really? So I got on.
They put them in.
No, we got the free 100.
For the guy. They put a new window in.
But we got the free 100.
So I think the to your point is that before we move forward, before we post for positions, we need to hear from, you know, I was hoping to have Ken on the phone tonight or Zoom, whatever.
Sure.
We need to ensure that they're going to remain in the interim because that was our arrangement. Two, we need to get some figures from Janet Wortman to see what we can afford. Can we afford two people? How many hours a week? I mean, whether it's one person or two person or three people, how many hours can we afford weekly for maintenance? And,
are you thinking you want more than what we had?
I'm not necessarily. I just want to make sure that I'm hearing from our accountant what we can and can't afford. You know, especially in times where we're talking about penalizing or restricting somebody who's on who's notifying us that they're working greater hours than they're contracted for. We have another person we're laying off now. I think we need to be clear about what monies we can and cannot spend and why these exist in separate buckets or silos, however you want to, you know, frame it, so that people understand that those monies are dedicated for this purpose and that can only be used for this purpose and how many are there and what we can and can't afford.
Okay. All right.
I know we had a full-time maintenance at one time, but he did Section 8 too. But we did away with the full-time maintenance guys. It was 5 hours each day for each the two maintenance people. They each got 5 hours per day.
Yep, I understand that. And I appreciate the history, but we have to acknowledge that as we move forward, we literally talked about and we agreed to lay someone off in this meeting, and we're talking about disciplining potentially somebody else who's working beyond the number of hours allotted mm-hmm. to them. So I want to move forward where we set a clear foundation as what is there and what the expectation is for these roles and responsibilities. So we avoid pitfalls and naysayers, quite frankly.
All right. So I'll call Janet tomorrow. Would you like to talk to Ken and ask him about the pitfalls or ask him to give you something in writing?
Sure. I just, like I said, it's not about to be, this isn't going to be an FU conversation. This is going to be okay, you weren't a good fit. You managed thousands of properties. Maybe we're doing something wrong. You know, tell me what we're missing, if we're missing something, or maybe I'm going to say, you're right, we're a small outfit and you're a big operation and the two just don't mesh nicely.
Right. All right. I'm going to text you his number. I know one of the things he'll say is that, you know, we were a little too hands-on is how I heard some of the conversation. So I'd be really interested in hearing your, you know,
yeah, I guess it's strange for me to I love that Ellen was hands-on. I like the fact that we're engaged. I want somebody minding the store. And the idea that we're too hands-on, we have somebody that's, we have an employee that's too dedicated to our financial well-being, that just doesn't jive well with me. So I want to understand what he's saying.
Good. That's perfect.
Yeah, it is.
I agree because, you know, Ellen would say these things to me and I'd say, well, we've got to address them. Because we're trying to be so careful. We pay them a lot of money and we're still paying out a lot of money for other things like windows and doors. That, I don't know. I don't think if Ellen and Lou were there, they would have spent $1,000 on a door. That could have been terrible, actually.
I did not have 100% trust in this. I mean, when you have to explain to him that you need to lock a pod when you are going to another site, you don't leave the pod wide open when you have tools, refrigerators, stoves, and everything in there. You have to tell him that you're not supposed to do that.
Yeah, those are his personnel issues that he has to deal with. But, you know, it's so... You know, we're just looking to move forward and let's find out what's going on.
So, I agree. So I just don't think we can provide any action tonight until we hear from Janet Wortman. I don't want to move until I hear what we can afford.
Right.
Okay. I'll have that for you, you know, and we'll be able to hopefully vote on it at the next meeting.
Thank you.
But in the meantime, they'll stay put. They're not going to leave.
Okay.
He's promised that.
Yep.
All right. Thanks. All right, so I have absolutely no new business. So Ellen, subsidized housing coordinator report, that's you.
Oh, hold on. Okay, Steiger, the number 31 is vacant. I'm waiting for her paperwork. She still has to bring some paperwork into me. She wants to take it. I just leased up 56 CC Manor. We've been working with the insurance company on number 18 where the fire was. We're all set with that.
So that's ready for occupancy as well, correct?
Yes. I have to send out letters on all that. I am swamped. And then, of course, the research has to be done. It's just, so I'm working on trying to rent apartments and trying to do those and trying to do the daily stuff that I have to do, but I'm trying. Other than that, I guess we're good.
You do a great job.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Any questions for Ellen? Go ahead.
No, I'm good.
Okay.
You sure there wasn't an "and I" there somewhere?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. Uh-uh. All right. Bob and Adam, do you have any questions for Ellen?
I'll see Ellen in the morning.
Yes, you will.
Okay. All right. So that brings us to the end of the meeting. It is 7:45. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Thanks, Adam. Second. Okay.
Second.
Any discussion?
Nope.
Hearing none. We are
Thank
adjourned.
You.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Have a good night.
Ciao.
I'll get that number to you, Adam.
Thank you.
Thanks. You're welcome. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.